Good morning, once again, if you've been here for the earlier sessions. You're at the Innovation Theater. In this session, we go back to the future with Joe Derichowski of the NPD Group. Consumers have emerged from the confines of home where they spent their time during the worst months of the COVID-19 pandemic, and a rush of spending that followed their release outside of the homestead to find themselves living with inflation. Given the economic tumult of the last few years, the question of where opportunity lies is critical. Joe, who's the NPD Vice President Industry Advisor for Home and Home Improvement Industry, will take a look at 2023, provide insights where the growth opportunities lie. The housewares industry needs innovation, and Joe will look at the past decade or two to look back through the Great Recession, patterns that suggest what 2023 will be like and what's necessary to give consumers to get consumers moving forward. He will provide some ideas about needed innovation as regards both product development and marketing. And please, Joe.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much. And Mike and I go back a long ways. He's a very good friend. My wife gets my name wrong, so we have a hard time with it. I'm Joe, your friend. That's the easiest way. Isn't it great to see the show and everybody walking around? Again, just seeing all the different booths and everything out there, I love it that everybody's here. All right, so what I wanted to do today is, and we'll talk about the background, but I'm gonna share with you what are some of the current trends, just to set the stage, because the real issue is, when I looked at the sales data this past year, you know that only 8% of all sales were from new products? Now, historically, that should be about 15 to 20%. And when I saw this, as well as just finished the forecast that we're working on, I'm gonna give you a heads up, it's not gonna look that good next year. I'm really afraid that we as an industry pull back on innovation. And I think it would be a big mistake for what we do. So what I wanted to do today is really paint a picture. What is gonna happen in 2023? And one of the best ways to answer that, for those of you who don't know, is we also have a food group that tracks what you eat and drink. And there's a report that they write since 1980, they've been writing this. Every single major food company, restaurant company gets this report and they'll read it and really understand about eating behavior. But it's a wonderful way to understand what appliances and housewares can be done. So what I did is I went back and I looked at the 2008, 2009, 2010 and 11, just to put the context, and tried to see what were the changes in eating behavior, what lessons can we learn? And so that's what you're gonna see today. We'll have a little fun with it. Ask questions, we'll have time at the end, and hopefully I say something that makes you think of a new idea, leads to a conversation, and a year from now you stop me here and said, hey, you helped me grow my business. That's it. All right, so current trends. So we just recently merged with IRI, our company here. We track all general merchandise, which is what you will see on the left, and IRI does. I want to just call out the upper right corner. And it's kind of a fascinating thing. What it's showing is the dollar sales for 2019, 20, and 21, and the purple is 2022. And what we're seeing is what you expect is that the consumers are actually spending more money on food than what they did before in other years. Now, the reason why this is important, from my perspective, having looked at eating patterns, do you know from 1945 to 2008, there was only one year that we let the cost of food outpace our income, 1946. But since 2008, there's been about 4 or 5 years that we've had this happen. It's happening again. The reason is it's an emotional, yes, it is a budget issue, but it's an emotional thing. Whenever the consumer has their cost of food outpace their incomes, they get a little skittish. If gasoline gets above $4, we see a change in demand. So it's one of those things for our industry, we got a little bit of a headwind, but it's also a tailwind, and I'll talk more about that. The second thing I want you to think about, should I point this here, is when we look across general merchandise, and what you're gonna see is the blue bar is the percent change versus a year ago. And there's only one industry that grew this past year, and that's beauty. But what gets lost before I start showing you the forecast, and our industry can't lose, is look at the green bar. This is the percent change, and this is basically January 1st to February 11th of this year. If I did it to last week, it's the same chart, just different numbers. Same story. You see small appliances and housewares as one of the industry that grows. We are still above pre-pandemic levels. So while you will see sales decline, just recognize we went through nirvana. You know, we kidded at, where's Liana, somewhere in here, we kidded at the opening thing here. Imagine in 2019, if we could have sat around a fireplace and said, hey, next year to grow the business, what if we make everybody have to eat every meal at home? You know what, how about this? They can't even leave at night. They gotta eat at home, they'll wanna do stuff at home. How about this? Because they gotta work from home, maybe they'll buy a new home, so those people getting into the home buying buy their stuff quick. We'll make interest rates 2.5%, and we'll give them $2.3 trillion. Honestly, you think you're gonna do better than that again? No way. So we're in a math problem right now, but it's okay. What we can't lose sight of is we are still well above pre-pandemic, and not many industries can say that. Okay. The next thing, this is the area that I track and talk about, and the different industries that we cover, and we'll talk a little bit about it, but I want to call a couple out. The growing areas is home decor a little bit. We saw a growth there happening from a dollar perspective. But the other part is looking at kitchen and bath. Where the growth happened in kitchen and bath was primarily bathroom remodels, and it was more the main bathrooms. So even in textiles, which declined, the one area that grew was bath. So you see these things, how the whole home place kind of plays together for where we're at. Home improvement, the only area that really grew consistently was storage and organization. So when we start thinking about housewares, we see some of the innovation that we see here, what the consumer is saying is we're a little bit home-centric, we've done some home improvement, but now as we start to head forward, what is that next thing? What I can tell you to be thinking about from a decor perspective is home improvement, because of the recession, some of those bigger jobs may go away, so they may do a little bit more do-it-yourself or home improvement. But never forget this about home improvement. It's like eating potato chips, right? Once you do one, it's tough to stop. And the key is, can you tie in to what this year is going to be? All right, so let's get in further details. This is a little bit of an eye chart, but you guys have it. This is the overall trend in kitchen electrics. I'm just showing percent dollar change for last year. You'll see small to the left, big to the right, so the size of the circle is the market. But what is it that I want you to take away? And again, this is before we get to the future. What's the insight that it's saying to the consumer? What we're seeing is coffee makers grew. And when we look at top, I wrote the top five growing things based off of units. This is dollars, but the top units tells the story is we see espresso makers. As an industry, need to be able to say, all the coffee companies, we took on Starbucks and Dunkin', well done. We're still doing very, very well. We're keeping that breakfast occasion at home, but we gotta continue to innovate in new products, especially the specialty related coffees, those lattes, cappuccinos, things of that nature, to keep that business at home. We also see that ice cream yogurt makers, so entertaining was still important. I already know the first part of this year, the fastest growing thing was beer and cocktail makers so far. So all those things related to entertaining, we see that coming back. You start to see rice cookers, so carbs are making a way back. Oatmeal continues to grow with it as well. And slow cookers for entertaining being a big part in saving money. Right now, that's where you're seeing most of the growth happening. That specialty kitchen electrics is where your ice cream makers, places like that are. If we look at it from a housewares perspective, what's the story that we see? Well, again, portable beverageware, if you think about it, what happened in 22, you were returning to sports, you're returning to the office, you're returning to outdoor entertaining, you're returning a little bit to even indoor entertaining, you're being more mobile. There are all these new need states that we had, so portable beverageware has done very, very well during this period. What sometimes gets buried in here is the other parts is you see decorating tools, cookie biscuit cutter, other chop and slice, those really specialized things that are out there. Other open and close, we never forget the aging population, the difficulty to do that. We see a lot of growth happening, but it's hidden inside tied to the deeds that we see. All right, so there are good stories. Now a little bit of the bad news. The bad news is we are going to see a decline this year. And the big drivers is A, we kind of went through a little bit of a pull forward. We're going to start entering the recycle, the replacement period in 25 especially. We see a little bit of lack of innovation, which is the purpose of today's meeting. But we also see just some changes in behaviors and just mathematically where we're at. But I want to put it in context. If we look historically, you would see that we've been growing since 2015. And what had happened is when we look at 23 and 24, yes, they're down, but there's been a lot of years of growth. And we saw what 2020 did, just the magnitude of change. But I want to call out, look at 2017 and 18 on kitchen electrics. That's right when multi-cookers and air fryers really started to take off. You see 2015 and 16 for housewares. That's when portable beverageware took a big area, as well as the copper grill or copper cookware playing out. Bottom line is innovation can change this. You're going to hear this throughout the day because it is the one message I want to say. It is critical, critical that we continue to innovate with what we're doing. All right. And like I mentioned, 8% of this. So let's get to some of the history where people have. Right, looking back to 2008 and 2009. I love this. First quote that I have. This is the author, a colleague of mine since retired, who used to do all our eating patterns. But I love the first line that he had in here because I think it really sets the stage. There will not be a recession in eating, only winners and losers. I'll never forget one time I was presenting to the Candy Association and my wife traveled with me over there and I have this big picture of my son. He was like 4 months old in full crying mode. My wife stops like, what are you, like on this big screen, what are you doing? And everybody, the purpose of the screen was trying to say, everybody was causing, it was about health related and smoking. I said, if there's a difference between smoking and this, we gotta eat every day, otherwise we're gonna cry. There will not be a recession in eating. There will only be winners and losers. It is critical this year to really win on the fundamentals. So what are some of the things we saw in this report? And I'm gonna give you a heads up, and actually I wanna thank you this. I wanted to keep the report authentic. So I took pictures of the slide. It's really hard to take pictures of a report that big. So I'll give a little call out in the green to what really is going on in the slide and the takeaway in the blue. But all I want you to do when you do look at the picture is just look at the direction. That is every year from 1984 to 2009. Each bar is a year, 1984, 85, 86, 87, all the way up to 2009. And ask yourself, is it growing? In that last year or two, are you seeing a change? That's what I want you to look for, okay? So in this bar, it's the annual meals purchased from a restaurant per person. And you can see it was growing, it kind of leveled out, and look at those last two bars. Clearly, when the recession hit in 2008 and 2009, we stopped going to restaurants. Now you might, there's also a big insight into this chart just stepping off of the innovation of 2008 and 2009. Look at what happened in 1990, all that area there. You want to know the strongest demographic variable that ties, that correlates with restaurant meals? It's the percent of women entering the workforce. In part because what our food data would tell you is they're still responsible for the most part of the planning, the preparing, the cooking, the eating, and the cleanup. And so what ends up happening is when you have both parents doing it, it really puts pressure on convenience. And what's the most convenient option? That appliance popped up. Restaurants became an appliance in 2000, really in 1970, but it started to take place in 1990 and above it took off. The percent of women working flattened out at 2000. And that's why you see this coming up. But the reason why it declined was strictly because we needed to save money. And what we learned is it's 3 to 4 times cheaper to eat at home than it is a restaurant. So with that in mind, going back to this, sorry, this same chart. With that in mind, this year our food team is forecasting a slight increase in restaurant meals, but it's a little misleading. What that's driven by is you might do a few more extra lunches on days because you might spend a few more days in the office this year than you did last year, and business travel will pick back up this year compared to last year. What's going to fight this desire to get out of the house is it's 3 to 4 times cheaper. And so call a recession a headwind, it is also a very much a tailwind for our industry. One of the things that we need to think about, and my advice to you, is how can you market the savings by doing a behavior at home? If you're not going to Starbucks or Dunkin', are you saving, what, $1,200, $1,500? Maybe do food two grand? Average machine last eight years, what's that, $16,000? Anybody aware of that, planting that seed in the consumer's head? How do we do that in a unique way for your product category? Second thing, we get consumers, God love us, we all are very creative in what we do and how we try to save money. And we're very creative hacks, and there will be something done this year that is not obvious, but I'll give you an example of some of the ways we did it in the past. The first thing we did is this is the percent of on-premise restaurant orders that included this item. And it has potatoes, desserts, breads, side salads, soup. All you gotta ask yourself, for everybody weighing back, are all those lines declining? Yes. Did it decline an extra little bit that last year? Yes. In essence, one of the ways to save money is you just don't have as many items. So they used to have the value meals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. When the recession hit, they're like, nope, I just want the burger. Fries, optional. Drink, I'll take water. Same thing at home, the number of ingredients or additives or cooking aids that you may use, you might use fewer ones. And probably the biggest one to think about is a lot of times we'll switch to grain or have larger volumes of meals and maybe a little less meat, or the meat becomes an ingredient to the dish, not the end dish itself, as a part of a way to save money. So the consumer will think of very, very creative ways. So I'll give you an example in that last one. If I'm using meat as the ingredient, that probably means a one dish meal. So whether it's a multi-cooker, a slow cooker, a saute pan, a casserole dish, all those things are gonna have opportunities to help solve this need. This is the average number of end dishes in home. You can see it declining. And look at the last couple of years. Whoop, it popped back up. So in essence, all those side dishes that we cut off at home, we started to do it in home. Because we started to make larger portion sizes, so it created leftovers to help save money. So this is another opportunity to be thinking about, how can you help with the side dishes? Maybe it's a case where you're doing just a series of appetizers, and that's a cheaper way to save money. But there's gonna be some creative hack that allows us to still be full, but doing it at home. This chart, you see a huge growth, big decline, and then suddenly a large spike back up. That's leftovers. That's leftovers for dinner. So do we think there's gonna be more leftovers this year? Yeah, because I'm going to tell you, when I looked at 1990 and 91, it was the same thing. We always see a little bit of bump that happens because it's a great way to save. So food storage, wonderful. The appliances and cookwares that are used to make leftover meals, wonderful. Those are the things that are there. Maybe a way to make the leftovers taste better, your air fryers and toaster ovens. There's a lot of opportunities, but just assume leftovers will be part of it. But what will be different than 2008 and 9 and more at play this year is now we got the midweek lunch that we're eating at home. Well, we didn't have that last time. We also got maybe the breakfasts that we're gonna do at home. The mid-morning and mid-afternoon snack. So there's a lot of opportunities that we didn't have last time, but I guarantee you what we learn every other time is we'll do something. So how can you play into those occasions a little bit more? If we look at carried meals, so this is the annual number of carried from home lunch meals. See it growing from 1984 up to 1995, or 1984 to 1995, it kind of slid down 2000, and it started inching way back up, but then it suddenly took a big jump after 4 or 5 years of pretty consistent of 41, 42 meals as we hit the 2008 and 9 recession. So what happened? We look to save money as we do it. This is where the carried breakfasts are also a new play that wasn't necessarily there last year. The other thing I saw was interesting, I don't have it in this chart, is we skipped fewer meals during the pandemic, or during the last recession, 2008. So the skipped lunches and the skipped breakfasts, because it was in home a little bit more, we skipped it less often. That's another good news for us. So the question is, back to those leftovers, how do we make it taste better? How do we help the consumer serve it easier? Look at this. This is the percent of people, households, using a slow cooker at supper. It's pretty much growing from 6.5% of meals in 1984, growing, but it kind of stayed peak levels, but stayed up there at that area. In essence, I do know we're trying to save money, and we see it from our IRI data even right now that we have, that the cost of protein has increased dramatically. You're gonna see people adjust by, do they do protein? Do they make an ingredient? Do we bring rice or grains back or pasta? Because we're still gonna want that leftover to play into it. What are the appliances or cookware and or all the gadgets used to make those dishes? Those are the ones that are probably gonna benefit because we're gonna look to make these leftover meals. Do it again. This is the percent of main dishes where the original form was frozen. Safe to say that was growing, but then suddenly it jumped a lot higher the last 2 years, fair? Why is that? What ends up happening is that Monday to Friday, when you're kind of in a rush, you're looking for quick meals that you might rely on a restaurant for supper, what you're trying to do, because it's 3 to 4 times cheaper to eat at home, you start using frozen meals. So what are all the things that we're gonna need for frozen meals, right? Well, one of them, is it any surprise that we look at the trend in microwave usage? Again, look at that chart. 1984, when it first started up, it gets to 1991, and it pretty much stayed flat from 91 all the way to 2007, and then suddenly 2008 and 9, we saw a jump in microwave usage because it became a way to solve that midweek dinner. Now, what are we gonna have different this year? Again, hybrid life. We're gonna be needing it for lunch. We're gonna be needing a little bit for breakfast. So I think the microwave, the toaster oven, those things that allow you to heat something very quickly, if you can play to make frozen foods or that solution, and the grocery retailers will be doing some of the ready to eat at a much greater level than they did back then, it's gonna be that thing that basically says, listen, I just gotta push a few buttons and I'm ready to go. That's what we'll be looking for this year in 2023. So in summary, for this part, before I give you some of the ideas, having looked at the history of this, having studied our eating habits since, for myself, 1998, but living, eating, and breathing with Harry for so many years, I have his voice running in my head, I can tell you that going through these things, this year we will eat meals at home. That drive to go out will be there. We'll have some restaurants, but just mathematically, this drive to eat at home will be there to save money. There will be some creative hacks. So I'd pay attention to social media, and if you see somebody doing something as a way to save money, or if you can inspire them as a way to save money, you're gonna be able to make some money. We will use leftovers and carried meals, so if you're anything related to that, you should have a good year because of it. Frozen meals will increase that solution for that midweek dinner occasion where we have time pressed, and we'll use ways to heat the food in one dish meals a little bit greater than before. All right, so what are some ideas that we have? Food for thought. To me, this chart here is the number of people working from home. That red line, and we saw in February is about 8 million people. It jumped up over 80 million people very quickly during the pandemic. You can see in 21, as we got vaccinated, it started to decline. Then we saw Omicron and jump back up and then came down. It's kind of ebbing and flowing. To me, the innovation opportunities are always about change. It's about the pain. There's an I wish, I hate, I love, I miss that we do in everything that we do. And what's happening right now, one of the changes is we got this days we go in the office, my breakfast routine, my lunch routine, my dinner routine is different on days that we didn't go in the office. And that's probably the biggest change. And because of that, how do we solve it? And what's good about it is there's this tension. Because also having studied consumer behaviors, never underestimate how lazy we can be as consumers. We crave routine. So how do you make a routine for breakfast, lunch, and dinner on days you go to the work and days you don't? And so we're trying to sort it out. We're looking for inspiration, but it's going to change the foods we make. It's going to change how we prepare them, and it's going to change how to do this. And we need to be thinking about how can you help solve that tension? How can you help inspire that tension? I thought it was really good to hear just, well, we'll get to that. But it's really about inspiring the consumer on how to solve these needs. The second thing I want us to keep in the back of our mind is right here. So this is the percent of time making meals. Now, to put this in perspective, well, first, let me give you today. About 2/3 of all breakfasts and 2/3 of all lunches are all prepared in less than 5 minutes. Now that includes ready to eat, but that's less than 5 minutes. Days you go into the office, days you don't go into the office. How do you solve that? What this is saying, you see what percent of the time the change is really the less than 5 minutes. Now let me put this in context. In 2020, the growth for the first time was here. So picture, since 2001, the number one need state always was speed, speed, speed. Now you not go in the office in 2020, you work from home, speed falls down into the need states. You add to your, how many people added new recipes in 2020 to your cooking repertoire? All of you. And how many of those were probably 40 minutes or above? Decent amount. So what are you going to do now? Because some of those things you're still going to want to eat, right? So you're just going to save that for Saturday or Sunday night? Or can we figure out a way to help you make those Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday? Can we figure out a way to do it so maybe it becomes the leftovers that also play out? So there's this drive for convenience that we're going to need, but we got to really think, how do we tap in to make some of those new recipes that you just developed stay in your portfolio that you cook on? The last thing I'll leave you with from a timing perspective, this is my daughter, Sydney, and it was interesting. I'm using her to illustrate a point that you'll see. It was interesting talking to her. She gave me her birthday list a little bit ago. The number one thing was this compact refrigerator because for her beauty, a little pop or something in her room and stuff like that too. But the reality is everything was home related. There were no toys, there were no clothes, there was nothing. This was all about her room. Now part of that is the life stage, but it also reminds us that what happened in 2020, instead of doing things that because we spent so much time at home, we created all these cocoons or havens within our house. And what that's done is also changed how we digest media. And so you'll hear everybody talk about the influence of social media. It's true, but a part underlying current is this thing, this new behavior that we started to do during the pandemic, one-on-one consuming and digesting trends. So the key is how do you inspire them? So I asked her one time, I was getting ready to talk to one of the retailers, and she goes, oh, I love those guys. And she just didn't even understand the nerd that I am. But she starts to share, like, yeah, so I'll see something pop up on, you know, one of my YouTuber guys talk about it, and then I immediately jump to their app, and I look at the items that they have, and I read the reviews, and then I check it going, yeah, I want to keep that on my list. And so then when we and my girlfriends go shopping, we go it, and I already have a list out. My wife would never do that in a heartbeat, right? But yet, there's a change. Remember the only industry that was growing? Beauty. It is 100% driven by the TikTok and the social media and stuff like that. It shows something and the stuff runs out there. my colleague was talking about, and I can't remember the name, but it's a little perfume, like $400, like an ounce or something. But it was all driven by TikTok, and everything's skyrocketing out of it. The key is this world of social media to inspire has really changed the shopping. You'll hear questions in store or online. I think it's really more about how do you inspire? How do they do research? How do they transact? How do you deliver it? How do you pay for it? And how do you build a relationship? That's where the game is happening in the next 5 years. There's such innovation because of the lockdown, and the retailers have done a phenomenal job of it, exploring, and manufacturers as well in this space. I really think there's a whole new way to build a connection with the consumer that we have there. Now the question is, how do we build into it? So, in summary, invest in innovation. Innovate. I'm going to be monotonous today because as an industry, my fear is we pull back. I would much rather be in our industry than any of those other ones. Product, solve that tension between the hybrid life and the desire for routine. Marketing, speak to the I wish, I hate, I love, I miss, either in using the product or in the occasion itself, breakfast, carrying a meal, having a party, Thanksgiving, whatever the case, whatever the life moments. A really nice job the Newell folks here did a little bit ago in partnership with IHA. Really nice job talking about that. It's marketing to the life moments that we have. And then that path to purchase, hey, it's a whole new world right now. There's a lot of innovation happening. It's been ripe, it's been building, but the game is on. Think of new ways to make it easier to inspire and make it easier to shop. So with that, I always know there's questions, so I'm gonna kind of stop right there. One last thing. If you have any questions, Jocelyn Griffiths is here. Happy to reach out to her. She'll be able to follow up with anything that you have there. And with that, I will stop and answer questions for what you have. I hope this was helpful.
Thank you. And thanks for your kindness at the beginning of the session. But what really frightens me is I couldn't pronounce the word Joe.
Well, I have that too.
Yeah. Now I won't be able to produce Mike. I mispronounced Mike. Thank you. Anyone have any questions?
Could be about anything up here. Could be categories, shopping, consumers, eating.
Hi, thank you. So my question is around the percentage of innovation that people are absorbing. So, you know, you said we're down to 8%. Is part of that that there is no innovation for them to purchase, or is it that they're less likely to purchase innovation because of the recessionary environment that we're in, or is it balance?
It's the number of items. Okay. And the funny thing, it's not just our industry. We've got another, when we look across all general merchandise, everything's down. And part of it, because, I mean, you guys, just what you just went through the last few years, you guys are gonna be bored in 24. Like, what you just went through, all the inventory challenges, all the things that are there, you got focus. So it's totally understandable that the number of new products launched was just way less. What my big fear, and so there's just flat out smaller number of items, not just in home, in every industry. The problem is I get really worried when people look at that math and they say, oh, it's gonna decline for 2 years and I'm gonna pull back, and I'm terrified what that does, because we have changed. The hybrid is creating, there's something that's gonna, the floor is gonna start to settle here, and it'll be a platform to jump off for the rest of the next decade. But we'll be able to jump from there. And you know, with that I forgot to give a point. I want all of us to think about this. This is a little out of the box, but a way to think about innovation. I don't know the answer, I want you to pay attention. But everything is generational. I mean, if you think about it, health and wellness really started in the 70s there, when marathoning sort of took it, and the Olympics, the first American won a marathon in the Olympics. You saw running taking off. And there was a big decade of health that happened from the 70s until the beginning of the 90s, right? And then suddenly, because most generations, you figure about 15 to 20 years, and suddenly what, remember Gordon Gekko, greed is good, right? So we saw the 90s, to the early part of the 2000s and stuff, that became more of a different defining moment. But then in 2008-09, when the recession hit, we were forced to go back home. And so that younger generation, we always talk a good game of being about healthy, but they actually acted on it. And when you're healthy, that means eat more homemade, less processed foods. You start to exercise more and more fruits and vegetables, all good stuff for our industry. So we've been in this window since 2008. 15 years is right about now. The pandemic kind of stretches it out, but there's something coming that'll probably be defined in the next few years. We've got a couple of years to sort it out that'll set the tone for the next 15. You got to pay attention and watch what's happening there. It could be acquiring goods, could be smart, could be technology.
I'm on my way.
Where's the basket? Are we supposed to be throwing that mic?
Some people that makes nervous. Mostly me when I'm throwing it.
Thank you. So all of these trends now, how do you see the impact on the cleaning aspect of the industry and what that means in terms of hybrid schedules, staying home, what's happening in the whole clean, that's what I cover, Good Housekeeping, so the whole cleaning space, and are the trends in that in those areas and those categories following similar?
Yeah, well, and it's a great example. It very much follows it. So, and we'll describe something. Like one of the things we had in the Market Watch trends yesterday talk about was wellness and about the emotional wellness being so important part of it. And if you think about it, with you being more home-centric, there's something about being organized. That's why you're seeing a lot of that growing. But also we want it clean. But now the issue, and that's this funny thing, it's in our we do this, that forecast that we give you, I should tell you about. We do a forecast of over 200 items, do it on a quarterly basis for the next 3 years, units, ASPs, so on and so forth. And all the forecasts, you know, you get, for the most part, we've been very close within a point or two. But there's always gonna be some outliers. And one of the outliers is an insight, and it was robotic vacuums. I would have thought in 2022, as you went back to the office, who wants to clean, right? So I thought robotic vacuums is gonna take off again, but it didn't. And I have a hypothesis related to cleaning. One, I think the stick vacuum people have done a great job innovating, enough so that it looks good that you actually don't have to go put it away. It's closer to you. Again, never underestimate how lazy we can be. We're not gonna walk from the couch to turn the TV on. If I can only walk over here as opposed to going to the basement or something, getting the vacuum, I like it. But I also think it became more convenient because of the hybrid days versus not. So I think the definition of convenience is different today for cleaning than it was in 2019. And I think that's the innovation. Because of that hybrid lifestyle, the need is there. The home centristically has dialed it up. But how we define convenience or effectiveness is the bar has risen. So if you have an innovation that helps in that spot, I like it.
Do you have any more questions? Of course. That's all right, I could lose a little weight.
So of all the ones, I'd be curious how many steps you do.
Yeah. All right, who do we have? Ah, okay. Closest is first.
Hi, going back to talking about innovation, we're a small family business and we're very innovative. And we have had several inventions in the last few years. It's very, very difficult bringing your innovation to market. You have many bigger companies who want to see it. Suddenly, even if you have a patent, patent lawyers passed and everything's in process and you've been told that you're fully protected, you'll still get people who copy it directly, and these big companies have got many lawyers. Do you have, and I think that's very stifling, do you have any advice for small businesses who are innovating in the marketplace?
Well, and that's a hard thing. So, and I assume everybody heard the question there. How do you market knowing that some people can copy it very quick? That's always been a challenge, but the challenge is a little bit better today. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer, so I won't do all the patent and the legal stuff. There's some maneuvers you can do. But from a consumer perspective, is I think because of the advancement of YouTube, TikTok, Pinterest, Snapchat, all of that stuff, you have a chance to be first in the consumer's mind. And having spent many times still first to mind wins. So if you can get into the mind and win the heart first, then you got a shot. I can't talk about the technical part of that, but I do believe very much if you can win the heart and mind first, that'll take off. And then the beauty is once it takes off, the retailers will find it. And I don't think, you know, if you think 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have that vehicle. And even 2019, that vehicle wasn't developed as much as it is today.
Somebody else down here? Oh, well, let me start over here. Okay. Let's start here, and we'll move back.
Hey, Joe, two questions related. Regarding inflation and people starting to take on second jobs and the impact of that. And then the second thing is decentralization of population away from expensive living places to less expensive places. So are you focusing on condos? Are you looking more suburban, like more remote places, stuff like that?
Well, I think what you're calling out is a chance to really solve two different needs, right? Because you do have, you see the migration. When I look at the geo data and look at which areas are growing, it's clearly A, driven by where the population shifts. So that importance of your first home or people moving is still driving it. The other thing that plays with it, if there's a natural disaster or something of that nature, you see that change. And sometimes we forget about that. All those folks, in addition to the air purifiers and heaters, they still need food. So a part of it is you are seeing a shift in the demographics where people are moving to because of that. In terms of the economics, the first question that you had, remind me again that one. So the one was the economics was the, yeah, so they're moving because it's easier to live in other places. Yeah, so they're going to be looking for things too, and that's where some of the space savings comes in. I think, and if we look at the population shift, you also see the growth of the people 60 plus tends to be 1 to 2 person households, as well as a little bit some of that younger going to enter that space. I think it's hard. We forget that the needs and space needs for a 1 to 2 person is different from the family. In addition to that, the 1 to 2 person, it's hard to cook health. It's hard to be healthy. It's hard to cook that, right? Because usually the recipes are for big quantities or things of that nature. So I think there's an opportunity to really better market at that and help consumers play into that space. I think you're going to see some people move demographically with it. Just understand if there's a life moment like what they talked about, if somebody's buying a new home, there's an opportunity. But what sometimes gets lost too, though, I do got to add this comment as it relates to that move. You ever, anybody here do a kitchen remodel, or your friends? And if you ask them, you go, oh, so did you buy a coffee maker? And they're going to go, yes. And then if you say, well, did you buy a tabletop? And they might go, well, no, I already got them. Did you not have a coffee maker? Well, yeah, I did. But the key is, when I think about it, is some of our housewares, think of gadgets, think of tabletop, think of even bedding and things of those natures, those things where people in that life moment, whether it's a move or whatever, that don't upgrade, we gotta ask for the order. We gotta market for it. We're like the waiter walking to a nice restaurant that says, do you want dessert with that meal? Because they can have a good meal without it. But you wanna make it great? Like, there's just a difference. So I really think we have to be not passive and waiting for the consumer in that move. We gotta go get them. We know you moved, how about tabletop to really make this house your own? How about new gadgets to really solve, fit with your kitchen? How about new bedding to make it be your own? All that stuff we have to be aggressively marketing to that life moment.
Joe, in the context of making leftovers taste better, could you speak more about food storage and like beyond the air fryer and toaster oven, any other items that you think will benefit from this trend?
From leftovers beyond food storage and beyond toaster ovens and ovens to do it? Well, that's a good question for you. I see somebody, one of my colleagues showed something, so I gotta go look, is there something we could do with cookware that could make it easier to warm up, heat up faster? Is there a way to, I like products that allow you to maybe plan for it ahead of time. I'll give you an example. Up until 2019, the average lunch, the preparation time was 1 minute, and the cleanup was 1 minute, but the eating was 29. You actually spent more time in the act of eating for dinner or for lunch more than you did for dinner, because it was a lunch break. Now, days you're at home, I bet your preparation process is a little higher, isn't it? Your eating time is probably less. The cleanup. And so now the question is what can you do from an innovation? Does that play more in cookware? Does that play more in something else that keeps things hot and running longer so they could serve it? Does it play into a different, does it allow you to go outside? You know, could outdoor grilling be an opportunity for that lunch? But is there something you can put on the grill in the morning, but by the time you get done at lunch, it's ready to eat? So how do you go through this? This is where I think some of the innovation that can take place is out there. I don't know the answer, but I hope you guys, a year from now, say, I thought of a great idea, it sold, and it made me a lot of money. Thanks.
Get down here.
Quick question about like kids and family. So I think during the pandemic, we saw a lot of, because everybody was at home, the kids were getting more involved in cooking and experimenting and using the appliances. And certainly, you know, I work hybrid, so there are days when I have to make a meal really quickly, but then there are other days when I want to cook with my family and have that process. Are you seeing that in the data that there's like more kids are getting involved? And
we did in the early part of 2020. As we've gotten vaccinated, we see that going down, but I think that is a great answer. Like, we saw that trend for the uses of restaurants, and I said the restaurants became an appliance. The appliance that is really underdeveloped is kids, right? Like, you want to make mom's life easier, have kids be able to do it. Even if they could just do breakfast, that routine thing. So mom's juggling a circus in the morning. You get a chance to make her life a little bit better and give her a little bit of time there so she can coordinate things. I love it. Or if it's something so it's not a hover type of appliance, that's also very good, or cookware item that plays with it. You know, from a cookware, can I suddenly have it on and be able to look from here and there's a way that says, oh yeah, it's done, it's ready to go. Like, are there things that we can do? So from a kid's perspective, if you can build something, I think that's important. The second part is there was an activities. We saw a growth in the number of people doing these as activities. That has fallen off, but the craving is still there from what our food, and again, when I talk about eating, there's data behind this, so this, it's not opinion. What's happening is there's a craving that's still there, so I think you can inspire some of those family nights, whether it's Pizza Fridays and movies that's happening, Taco Tuesdays that are out there. There's all those things that you can play, and that's where I'd inspire them.
Anyone else? I'd like to ask a question because I want to bring back a point you've made in a couple of different ways. A lot of the sessions here have talked about hybridized eating. And once upon a time, if restaurants went up, we had to be concerned that housewares would go down. Now, examples that have been made are people who are ordering main dishes from a restaurant and using their own leftovers to eat with it. Saves money, can make things a little easier. You have people, as you said, making larger meals so they can use them in more than one occasion. And it was funny, as this was coming up, I went, wow, we're part of that trend, and I didn't even realize it. Because on Mardi Gras, we made jambalaya, but almost as much as I was looking forward to that, I was looking forward to my jambalaya eggs on Saturday. How much do you think people in the housewares industry need to track these particular food trends? Because obviously, they are going to, if they're not being generated by younger people, they're being generated by their parents, we're trying to treat them, but in a reasonable way. I mean, it just seems to be an opportunity that people need to think through. Would you agree with that?
100% agree with that. And part of it is, as consumers, we just, you know, some of the times we're leading the consumer, but some of the times it's just watching what they're doing and going, huh, can I make that easier? Or can I make it better? Or I used to always use this word, can I add an can I make it better, faster, cheaper, safer, healthier, safer than the existing behavior that they're doing? And if I can do that, I like it. So if you can watch what they're doing and go, well, what if I vacuum sealed it and somehow that kept in whatever better? Or what if I made it this way so that it's able to heat up faster for it or get to the exact right temperature so I can do it? Or what if I can make it so it's crunchier? Or what if I can make it so it's chewier? Whatever the case may be, if there's a way that you can advance that, I love it.
Yeah, it's adding, even just adding new flavors to leftovers. And anything that works that along those lines.
I'll give you one. Think of the take-home meals. right? By the time it leaves the restaurant, gets to your house, you cattle call the family to all get in there, right? Is the food at the optimal taste? No. What are we doing? Everybody's jittering around. Can we solve it? Is there a way we can make that meal get to that point? I don't think we can get the kids to the table faster. So what can we do to coordinate that? Or what can we do to keep that flavor longer? And I think that's a good example. You can watch what they do and go, is there a way I can make that experience better? And if you can, and then you tell us about it as a consumer, there's money. There's money.
I think we can take one more. Or actually, we have a little bit more time, sorry.
Hey, Joe. Question, is there some statistics on your website or so forth on what are the food trends? So in terms of, is it, what are people eating? Is it more nutritious, which is it plant-based? Is it XYZ? Because the preparation certainly changes for each one of them. And nutritionally, to be, that seems where so much of this innovation and interest is going. Can we get more information or see that someplace, any of your information, your research?
Here are four things I would do. Yep. Follow me on LinkedIn. Our marketing people you'll get some of that. There's a colleague of mine named David Portalatin. David Portalatin, P-O-R-T-A-T-L-A-T-I-N. David does what I do for the food industry, so he works with all the restaurants and folks. I'll give you time. Myself, David Portalatin, another gentleman named Darren Seifert, and it's S-E-I-F-E-R-T or I-E-F-E-R-T, I apologize for the spelling, but the only one at NPD. He will also put some good stuff. He just did a future of snacking on there. That's pretty good. Again, it's all mathematically driven, so it's great stuff. This is on LinkedIn. Now, for the company website, it's funny you asked that. So we merged with IRI. This is not a plant, but what you don't know is tomorrow we launch our new name. So NPD and IRI will no longer exist tomorrow. They will now become a new thing. I can't tell you what it is. I know nothing about it. There's a big lunch. All I can tell you is there's a launch tomorrow. But what I can tell you is whatever that new name is in the website, there will be a section for news and PR, I'm sure. And that will continue to be another good place to go. But while you gave me a lead in, if our executive team here, they'd be proud.
We actually do have a little bit more time. Is there anyone else? Well, in that case, thank you for attending. Joe, thank you.
Guys.